Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Have you ever caught yourself holding back, afraid to say what you really think? Well, you're not alone. Most Americans, as it turns out, feel the same way, worried that speaking up could backfire. Psychologist and best-selling author Dr. Chloe Carmichael is my guest today. She says that silence comes with a cost to our relationships, our confidence, even our mental health. Her new book is called Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly. It offers simple ways to speak your mind with courage and compassion without losing your voice or your friends or your family. Yeah. Today, Dr. Chloe joins to talk about why expressing ourselves freely isn't just good for society, it's good for our emotional well-being. Dr. Chloe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lynn. It's great to be with you.
It's so interesting. You use there's some words here, you know, speaking your mind with courage and compassion. I feel like we're at this point because people were silenced for a long time and then people decided to use their voices, perhaps not in the most compassionate way. And that's what we're at, this strange impasse where we can't find a balance of free speech and keeping our mouths shut when maybe we ought to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that everybody's going to have their own line of, you know, the healthy balance between self-restraint and self-censorship, right? So healthy self-restraint is, you know, when your mother-in-law says, how is the cake? And you say, it's delicious, right? Even if you think maybe it has too much salt, not a big deal. But we're crossing into the self-censorship territory when we are concealing how we really feel about issues that are actually important to us. You know, and those issues that are important to us category usually pertains to politics. Mm-hmm. And so when people even say, well, I don't get into politics, that's fine, but they probably have opinions about issues, whether it be abortion, climate change, immigration, gun control, violent crime, and what to do about it. These are issues that matter. Like the word politics, if you go to the root of the word, it just means public life, right? So people who care at all about their community and where they live, on some level, we're going to have opinions and we're going to differ.
Yeah. We've all had those times in which we either have to walk away, we feel our heart rate increasing because we're not saying what we think, and just thinking about what we might say gives us stress, and it's almost like a panic attack. You know, when everyone's been there. We've all been in those situations, and it's funny that we're right around, you know, Thanksgiving time, and we've all had that happen at the Thanksgiving dinner table. You have a sort of personal story surrounding this that kind of got you going on this whole notion of why it's important to have free speech.
Yeah. And I just want to also, you know, piggyback on what you just said about how when, you know, we're holding things inside that it feels stressful. And the opposite, the good news is also true, which is that when we have a heart to heart with somebody, our cortisol levels literally drop, right? So it really is, it's a two-way street. Holding things in, bottling stuff up does, you know, increase your stress. But the good news is there's a very simple fix of just, you know, sharing with people. And you're right, Lynn, I did have my own personal experience with that, which is what led to this book. So just a quick story. When I was 8 years old, I told everybody that I was going to live in New York and be on television. It was super important to me and I wanted to be an author. And so living in New York, I was, you know, and doing a lot of television, you know, big shows as a psychologist with, you know, my first book. And I was holding a lot of things back in the media just because they have a very tight narrative of what opinions they want to put on the air. And I never said anything that I thought was untrue, but I just also really restrained myself from certain full expressions of my viewpoint. And that was fine. I didn't see the problem with it. And I was doing that a lot in my, you know, kind of business personal life too. And then along came COVID. And I had a 3-year-old son, and I was not, as a clinical psychologist and as a mother, on board with masking him for like hours and days and months and years on end. And I was concerned that no psychologists were even talking about the problems of masking children like this. So I started to talk about it in public, and I knew that this could burn some media bridges. So I was really nervous about it. I knew it could ruffle feathers, but I did it anyway. And I noticed my own thought process about the issue started deepening because I had, just kind of vague ideas in my mind. And once I started talking about them with other people, as we know, it helps your cognitive process to have dialogue and talk things through. The emotional level, I started thinking and connecting, and we regulate our emotions through speech as well. And we create more authentic social relationships through speech. So I started experiencing all of those things myself. And that's really what got me thinking, oh my goodness, how could I have missed this? Of course, there's a connection between free speech, being yourself, saying what you really believe, and your mental health, of course.
But it also depends on how you do it. Sometimes I'll decide that I'm going to present what I really believe to, a certain family member that sees things oppositely, shall we say, an opposing viewpoint. And quite often it doesn't go well because there is so much emotion surrounding it, and neither party really knows how to approach it with the right words.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There is choosing your time and your place wisely, and framing the conversation, right? So I share a story in the book about an adult 22-year-old whose aunt in New York was kind of like her lifeline to the city. And, she had been smiling and nodding with her aunt's expressions of views about a lot of, issues like abortion or, president and all this kind of stuff. And she started to feel really fake and phony. And she wanted to bring it up and be real with her aunt, but she was afraid, as you said, that this could just be like a, powder keg situation. And so what she did is she texted her aunt to say, hey, there's been some stuff on my mind. I really want to talk with you. Can you come over? We can have brunch. We can talk. And then she took responsibility for it herself as well. She said, I've been holding some stuff inside. So this might come as a surprise to you, but I have some views and I've been acting as if you can't handle us having different viewpoints. And I'm sorry I behaved that way. So I want to tell you what I really think about some stuff. You might not like it, but I'm hopeful that we can listen to each other and just have a dialogue about it. We don't even have to agree. I just think it's important that we be real with each other, even if we disagree. And the story goes on from there, but at least that's a starting point, I think, to your point that we can't just blurt things out or do it without thought if we expect the conversation to go well. I think that goes no matter what viewpoint you have.
Yeah, so true. I have someone in my life who I dearly love, a family member. And because we see things very differently in the political realm, there's that. And I think a lot of families do this. They just agree to not talk politics. But he says we ought to be able to have a civil discussion. And he uses the word civil discussion, but when he speaks, he uses the inflammatory language lexicon. So instead of calling someone a Democrat or a Republican, he uses the extreme words where you might call a Democrat a communist or a Republican a fascist. And so it's like you're kind of missing the point here by using inflammatory language. So help us with how we can monitor ourselves, and maybe we call it self-censor, but maybe it's just training ourselves on how to use the right words.
No, that's such a good example, Lynn. Thank you for sharing that. So in a situation like that, the good news about conversations that predictably go off the rails with certain people is that we can prepare for it, right? It's not like this is some surprise, right? You know, we're not like, oh, wow, he's saying this, you know, we can see it coming a mile away. So the beauty of that is you can say, you know, hey, Uncle Joe or whatever, I've been thinking about what you said about a civil conversation. I would really like that. I think part of a civil conversation means that we use words that are accurate and precise, and it might help as well if we have some agreed upon definitions of those words. And so I've noticed in our talks before that words like communist and fascist get brought up. And so can we just have a quick moment where we agree on like a one sentence or two sentence definition of what fascism actually is? Like, who was Mussolini? Who was Stalin? What actually is communism? And then we can be sure that we're using accurate labels when we have our civil conversation.
That's so great. That sounds like a lot of work, Dr. Chloe.
Yeah.
And is it just that we don't want to work that hard? We'd rather just walk the other way.
Well, you know, it does sound like a lot of work, but distance and hostility is a lot of work too. That takes a big toll on us as well. And, you know, closeness, being able, one thing to remember is that friction is actually often a sign of closeness. Two things have to be close together to cause friction. So like a dead marriage, a marriage is headed for divorce, not when there's arguments, but when there's a stony silence, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yes, relationships are work. So, I mean, that's just, you know, no matter what, like whether it be keeping up with your girlfriends and staying on top of the plans and remembering their birthday, like all that stuff's work. But the point is that there is a payoff and there's a cost, a mental health cost to just stifling ourselves or expecting other people to stifle themselves around us.
Yeah. If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, I'm having a conversation with Dr. Chloe Carmichael. Her new book is called, Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly. Now, in that tagline, use it fearlessly, I feel like we also, as a society, we've been stifling our speech. So then when it comes out and we start to use it fearlessly, we often use it in a really offensive way.
True.
And it's probably because we have been scared to, I don't know, be canceled or be judged for using the wrong word, the politically incorrect word that we weren't aware had changed from the last one that you weren't supposed to use. Yeah, what do we do about that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love that you're just, you know, outlining and normalizing. It is 100% true. When we've been bottling stuff up for a long time and then we uncork ourselves, you know, it can come out in fits and starts. So if I'm, say, working with like an anger management client, one of the first things that I want to do is teach him or her how to use their words and express frustration at lower levels. And I experienced this myself when I sort of came out of the closet and started talking about certain, you know, views that I, you know, some people agree with and some people don't. You know, for the first 10 years of my career in the media, I basically never said anything controversial. You know, I just talked about like, here's how to handle anxiety or whatever, like things that nobody would ever get upset about. But when I started talking about some of these issues, I noticed that I had a little bit of an edge that I wasn't sure where even that I liked. And I just think you're right to normalize it. It went away for me. It evened out over time because there is the fact that speech does help us to emotionally regulate. And if you haven't been speaking openly and freely, you haven't really been emotionally regulating about, you know, these topics or the differences or the way people regard them. And so there is that process of kind of degreasing the system, so to speak, when you first just start feeling your way out there with words.
Yeah. I bet you've heard some pretty crazy stories about people, you know, losing their jobs or being canceled for having said something that they didn't realize was causing harm, or I don't know, what's the category of things that people say that they don't realize is incorrect or is that offensive, and they find themselves without a job. I don't know. It sounds, sometimes it's just hard to believe when you read these accounts of things in the media.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot, you know. I think the good news is that corporate America is starting to even out a little bit on this issue. Like, I've been invited to speak about this topic now at the third largest law firm in the world, as well as Columbia University. I think some of these places are now wanting to almost like guard against lawsuits about, you know, suppressing, you know, viewpoints and things like that. So they're wanting to really fly the flag now and say, look, we welcome free speech here. So that's good. But what I think also sometimes causes issues is less about even what somebody might say and like what they don't say sometimes as well. Like, I share a story in the book about a man that was told by his HR lady that he would not be getting a promotion because they had enough straight white men in management and that they needed to focus on, you know, women and people of color. And he just plastered a smile on his face and, you know, just basically went into denial and was like, okay, because he didn't know how to say, that's not fair. Just like a lot of men, I think, don't know how to say, why do we have a women's affinity group but not a men's affinity group? Like, how is this fair, right? And then because he couldn't discuss it directly and openly, he started acting out just kind of a distance and hostility towards women in general in his personal life. And he couldn't figure out why. Finally, we connected the dots and he was able to just speak to an employment lawyer, handle the issue more directly, and then stop acting it out with all the other women in his life.
Well, that's a really great example. What's another example that comes to mind of someone that you've dealt with? Because it's what you do.
Yeah. So I actually share another story in the book, and this is kind of on the other side of it, about a man that was basically coming to me for support because he was getting ready to, quote, go no contact with his sister. Have you heard about this going no contact thing where people cut out their family members, like their parents, their sister, their brother, whatever? Not because that person was abusive towards them or whatever, but because this person voted for someone that they didn't like or, you know, whatever it is. So he was coming to me, you know, for support about this. And he was actually kind of depressed already. And he was rather isolated. And his sister, by his own description, was a lovely woman who really reached out to him often and kind of nurtured him in many ways. But she, you know, was celebrating when Roe v. Wade was overturned and, you know, she was teaching her son that boys cannot become girls and, you know, et cetera. And he said, well, I feel like I have to go no contact with her. Like, and I helped him see the irony of like, oh, because of my hate-free life, I'm stamping out hatred. And so, you know, therefore I'm going to cut out my sister, that there was kind of an irony there. And so what we did is we worked on just learning how to have conversations with her and understand that they might even have a lot of the same goals, social goals. They just had different ideas on how to get there. So you're right. There's a lot of stories. Everybody has their own, you know, personal version of it. But the common thread in all of it is learning how to speak up, how to listen, and understanding on a cognitive, emotional, and social level why it is important to do so.
So interesting. In the case of that man with his sister, who he was going to have no contact with, you know, do you find the common ground? Did he find the common ground with her, which was, you know, maybe that she wanted to protect her child from hurt or from, you know, some kind of trauma in his life. And that's why she didn't, you know, I mean, what is it? We all basically want food. We want a place to live and we want relationships with people that we love. I mean, right? Doesn't everyone want those things?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, to your point, a lot of times it's, you know, finding common ground. Like, some people were super angry when the Supreme Court ruled against allowing universities to use race-based affirmative action. Some people, you know, felt the opposite way. But the good news is I've had experiences where I've been able to work with people in dialogue about this and understand, guess what? We all have the same goal. We all feel that racism is wrong. It's just that some of us think that affirmative action is a way to mitigate racism. Others of us feel that race-based affirmative action actually is racism. So we might have different strategies, but the common ground, you know, is that we don't want to be racist, right? So we usually can find a common ground. And even with abortion, like, so some, you know, like women might say, like, well, my body, my choice, right? So we can say, okay, so we agree on bodily autonomy, but other people in the pro-life movement also want that bodily autonomy for the fetus, right? What about that person's my body, my choice, right? And so we might not even agree on where the line is or whose perspective is right, but we can find that there is something, a common thread there that we can agree on.
Yeah. It all is so great in theory, I would say. But you put it into practice by helping people as a psychologist to have these dialogues. Are there any, you know, 1, 2, 3 tricks that you can send us away with today that we just
totally
need to start with?
Yeah. So part one of the book is about cognitive and emotional and social, like, reasons why it's important. Part two is just all about techniques for speaking up as well as for listening. So, you know, when you have that reflective listening technique where, you know, person A, like if you were going to talk to that family member, you'd say, okay, now that we've agreed on our terms, I'm going to say, or you go first, say what he thinks about a certain issue. And then you are going to recap it back to him. You're going to say, okay, did I hear you right? You said this, this, and this. Is that right? And he'll either say, yep, or he'll say, not exactly, and he'll clarify. And then you switch chairs and do the opposite, where you say your piece and he recaps it back. And what that does is it makes sure that everybody's actually really comprehending each other. Because when our heart rate goes above 100 beats per minute, we really are not even cognitively comprehending. That's why people get in these arguments and they talk past each other and they're never going to come together because they're, like, so worked up, they're truly not even comprehending what the other person is saying.
Absolutely. Wouldn't it be great if, you know, sitting around the holiday table, instead of doing that thing where you go around and say what you're thankful for, whatever it is, that my kids always said, oh, do we really have to do that again this year? That you maybe engaged in a little exercise, like something that you offer up, and can I say that?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because I am getting ready to do a free Thanksgiving live stream about gratitude for free speech. And I'm having all the different people who endorsed my book hopefully come on for a few minutes. So I know we're wrapping up, so I'll close with that invitation. So if people want to go to freespeechtoday.com, it's my website. They can get the book. They can follow me on social media. And if you do get the book and, you know, let me know you got the book, I'll invite you to a little private reader group where we can practice techniques for free, and then connect on my social media and you can see my free live stream about Thanksgiving and gratitude for free speech.
That sounds wonderful. Dr. Chloe Carmichael is my guest. Her new book is Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly. Dr. Chloe, so nice to meet you, and thanks for this work you do. We all need it.
Thanks again, and freespeechtoday.com. I'd love to connect. Thanks, Lynn.
Thanks, Chloe.